Edit audio.
As professional sports and coaches, we have to co-create environments that are conducive for peak performance. And that includes making sure we're tapping into overall well-being.
This is Rebound Revolution, the women's basketball podcast that is as much about queer feminism, fashion, and social justice as it is about what happens on the court. I'm your guide, Dr. Money, your favorite full-time Indiana Fever fan and part-time scholar activist. Whether you're a veteran fan with season tickets, really want to become a rookie fan, or are just as gay and nerdy as I am, join me as we get into it all. Okay, picture it. You want to be working on some big goal you have. Cough, cough. For me, it's scripting a podcast episode. But instead, you're frozen in anxiety, scrolling Instagram. Well, in one of these moments, you just might come across a video by Changing the Game founder and shooting coach Brianna Garza. Brianna's tips for improving your shot have gone super viral.
I want you to pretend like this bottom ball is you digging your big toes in. And then your ankles, your hips, and your shoulders are the middle three. The top ball is the basketball. If the ball and my body are unlocking at the same time, then is this ball getting up to where I need it to be? No.
Brianna is an incredible educator. She makes learning motivational, and her tips are applicable beyond the basketball court. And if you're anything like me, Brianna's content will give you just enough of a break from anxiously scrolling to get started on that huge goal. In this episode, me and Brianna talk all of this and more, including the Changing the Game Conference. Changing the Game is the first ever completely women-led player and coach development conference. April 4th and 5th, Changing the Game Conference is coming to Cleveland, Ohio. And so am I. We at Rebound Revolution can't wait to be there and meet Brianna in person. The conference and lessons transcend sports and coaching into everyday life. A lot of it feels like tips you can apply to panic, anxiety, or just being in your body. If this sounds like something you'd be into, go check it out. We'll put the link in the description. Keep them on your radar and join us if you can. I am so excited to be joined today by Brianna Garza. If you don't know Brianna's name, I promise you know her shot because she's been everywhere on everybody's timeline. She is the founder of her brand and company, Shooters Shoot. Brianna, welcome to Rebound Revolution.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. Before we get into like the more at-length questions, we're going to do some rapid-fire questions. So if you had to describe your coaching style in three words, what words would you use?
Not about me.
Not about me. Wow. So like a selfless coach.
Yeah, I think that as coaches, it's really easy, as anybody, I think it's really easy to make things about ourselves. And as coaches, like once you become a coach, it's not about you anymore. It's about the people you're leading.
Oh, that's dope. I never thought about coaching like that. Do you have a favorite shooter in the W?
In the W, my favorite shooter is probably Maureen Yohannes. She plays for New York.
Oh, yeah.
And she is like all those French girls come to the U.S. and play, and they play with so much swag and flavor. And like you can tell they're not handcuffed in their development overseas. And she's so much fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there a difference between like, well, I mean, probably, but is there a difference between the way players are coached to shoot abroad versus in the States?
I don't know that necessarily like the shooting itself. I think the shooting itself is coached vastly different in like state to state, like county to county. There's not a lot of people who teach shooting from physics first. A lot of people teach shooting from mechanics first. But just the freedom and the flavor of the way European players play is basketball. We're so ball dominant. You go to a gym and watch a training session, that athlete's going to have a ball in their hands the entire time.
Yeah.
Whereas if you go and watch development in Europe or overseas, then a lot of it's based on off-ball movement, how to move without the ball. I think it's like 93.6% of the time the ball's not in your hands. So they learn to develop and move without it. Whereas, you know, in the US, we tend to be more ball dominant, which is
give me the ball.
Which like culturally is like on point, right? We're very individualistic in the US and in Europe and many other countries. It's very collective. So it's interesting how trends in sports kind of follow that same culture. Mm-hmm.
That's why Johannes looks like she's dancing when she has the ball. It's like,
she's amazing. She's amazing.
She's like a little dot, dot, dot.
1,000%.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite coach in the W?
Yeah.
Or maybe in women's basketball. I'll open it.
Oh, women's basketball, definitely Dawn Staley. 1,000%. My girl. Yeah. I love her leadership. I watched a little short documentary on her on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen the one, but just how she built South Carolina into what it is, into the place where girls who want to play in the WNBA, they go to South Carolina.
Yes.
Because the best players in the world want to play in front of fans. Like, obviously, in her coaching, like, speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. She's elite, the elite of the elite. But I think it's so special how she took time to understand the best players in the world want to play in front of fans. So I got to figure out how to get fans in the stands. And now South Carolina is what it is.
Yeah. Second perfect season in a row.
Wild.
Like, what?
Wild.
Who does that? Mm. Were you going to say somebody else, like a coach from the W?
Yeah.
I think I was fishing for the Dawn Staley answer.
Yeah. It worked. There's a new coach, a new head coach. She's been coaching in the W for a while for Dallas, Coach T. And Coach Trammell, I've met personally, and it's just like a world-class human being. I think there's this tendency sometimes when you meet somebody of that stature, like a head coach in the best league in the world, like what?
Yeah.
To feel kind of starstruck or to feel like you couldn't be just kick it with her and be normal. And she's just so like a shoulder shrug, like, yeah, all right, this is probably what we're going to do. And very comfortable, very defensive minded. She lets Enrique go and do her thing, which is amazing just for everybody involved, for all of us and for all of them.
I was trying to think if there was like anybody else. I think I like Sandy Brondello.
I was just going to say like, Sandy.
Yeah, I love her. And, you know, got to be biased with the New York team. But
Sandy gave my WNBA client, Emma Cannon. Sandy gave Emma her first chance in the league.
Oh, wow.
Which is, super special.
Yeah, with the Mercury.
With the Mercury. Yep, because... Mm-hmm. Emma in EuroLeague, her team played against ECAT. And so Sandy was coaching as an assistant coach for ECAT during that time and saw Emma, and Emma showed out. So then she was like, come to Phoenix on this 10-day training camp contract. And Emma's story is like a whole podcast in and of itself. But that's it. So I got a lot of love for Sandy too.
Yeah. Well, shout out to Sandy too. All right. Do you have a favorite place to watch a game?
If it's one of my players playing, I'd want to be there in the stands, not on the bench. I think a lot of coaches, when they start their coaching career, they have this idea that they want to be a head coach and they want to be on the bench making calls. And for about 6 months at the beginning of my career, that's where I was. I was a graduate assistant. Yeah. And I've since learned that I'd rather be in the background developing both as a player and as a shooter, as a person, in their confidence, and then be able to sit, you know, courtside and just like cheer. I don't want to think about the game. I just want to have your back and yell at the refs and just be a fan at that point. Yeah. All of our work we put in. So if I'm watching one of my players, I love to be in the stands, then be able to hear my voice, just encourage them. And normally if I'm watching a game on TV, it's I'm taking notes and I'm getting ideas from different players, different movements, seeing it that way. It's fun to go to basketball games in person, but it's better when I have, you know, a player on the floor that I can really lean into.
We heard you loud and clear. You love the WNBA and want more analysis and insight on your favorite players.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast. I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All season long, we'll be bringing you the post-game analysis that you crave and sitting down for interviews with athletes across the W.
You can listen to Queens of the Court on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So I want to back up a little bit. I haven't heard a lot of folks ask you about your origin story into basketball. So can we start there? Like, what got you into basketball? How'd you fall in love with it?
Yeah, I grew up in a small town in Texas, or several small towns in Texas. We moved 13 times before I was in the seventh grade. My daddy was a coach. So sports in Texas, he was a football coach. So you ever seen Remember the Titans?
Yes.
So yeah, Hayden Panettiere in that movie. That's exactly what my life looked like, is in the gym where I was a tomboy. I was yelling at the linebackers, like, how are you guys not seeing the A-gap? And I can see it, and I'm seven. Like, in so I always had keys to the gym. And I was sporty because my dad was a coach. My big brother was a basketball player. He was really, really excellent. And so I got to, you know, grow up playing against him and his buddies in the cul-de-sac on the crooked rim. And they wouldn't go easy on me. They'd send my stuff to the sunflower yard, you know, behind the basketball goal. So, yeah, basketball was my first love. It's the thing that's challenged me. It's the thing that I've always been able to make meaning of. And I was really good at it, and I worked for it. It was just something that was easy. Like, when you work so hard at something, you got to love it, right? And so once I got through high school, got to college, and played at the NAIA level, because I was very skilled, but I'm 5'6", and I can't move sideways, like, at all. So I it was hard for me to guard anybody. And after college, you know, I left it all on a really... on a really high note. We made it to the Sweet 16 for the first time in our school's history. I was a conference player of the year that year, and I was an All-American. And it's like, there was this split second of, should I go and try to play overseas? And then it was like, okay, do I want to play defense? You know? So
the answer to that was no.
Yeah, no, I'm a shooting coach, you know, not a defense coach. And so, yeah, it's not that I wouldn't want to play defense, but I just knew, like, realistically, I wasn't blessed with athleticism. I blessed with heart and a lot of grind and grit and shooting and skill and all that. But ultimately, the reality is, like, I couldn't jump or run with any of those girls that are, you know, at the next level, which is amazing that I get to work with these athletes now. And so I always had a really healthy relationship with my athleticism or lack thereof. So yeah, my dad got me into basketball and ended up taking me through college. And now it's what I do for my life. Who knew? Shooting, you know, so random.
Yeah. I'm thinking about so much in what you just said of, like, I don't know, like, this solution focus or, like, positive perspective on what your body can do, you know, and, like, okay, here's what I am good at, as opposed to, I think a lot of people freeze in the limitations, you know, it's like, oh, I can't move sideways. That means, like, it's over for me. But it wasn't. You have a whole career in basketball still.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's the chess match, right?
Yeah.
Like, I still go to the rec you know, and I play again. I'm 31. I'm not in my like athletic peak by any means. And I still do well. Like I get buckets on 24, 25 year old dudes just out of college because I can catch read. I can read on the catch. Should I catch and shoot? Should I catch and jab? Should I catch and fake and drive? And a lot of people talk about creating space for themselves. And what you think about is like movement. But really, it's just like, if you can catch and shoot, you can play with just about anybody.
Yeah. Okay. So after college, you continued on and got 2 master's degrees. So what informed that decision? What made you want to continue with education?
Great question. So with my first master's degree, I always knew I wanted to do psychology in some way. And when I went on an official visit to Oregon State, we're touring a campus, and the assistant coach that was taking us on the tour said the word sports psychology to me. And that was the first time I'd ever heard that phrase. And I knew immediately. I was like, oh my, what is that? Like, what is that? So after I discovered that that existed, I knew that was what I wanted to do. And my intentions for my degrees, as I mentioned before, was to become a college coach. And I knew if I wanted to be a college coach that I needed to be able to shape my players and their skills in the best way possible. So sports psychology, but my emphasis was in skill acquisition and skill adaptation. So I just wanted to know how to be the very best teacher of skills I could possibly be. Then after that, I took a couple of gap years and I was a bartender at the Chili's in Decatur, Texas. Hi, welcome to Chili's, you know? And once I was ready to get back into basketball, I took a graduate assistant job, which allowed me to get another master's degree in instructional design in human performance technology, which is a really pretentious way to say I learned how to design teaching so that it could be both in person or online or in any way, shape, or form, different deliverables, how to cater to all types of learners in whatever curriculum you're creating. And 6 months into that graduate assistantship, I actually resigned. And it was one of the hardest decisions I ever had to make, but there was just no joy in the gym. And that's a foundation and a non-negotiable for me. And when I resigned, I was like, well, I'm 6 months into this master's degree. You know, it couldn't hurt to continue on with it. And so, I went to school for 8 years after high school and accidentally became a shooting coach, like accidentally all of that, you know.
That is not accidental, Brianna. Right. Everything you just laid out, I kept thinking was like, you literally did each building block necessary to create what you're doing right now. It might not have been intentional, but my goodness, like you had all the pieces.
Yeah.
You're an educator. And it feels like universal design too. Like I'm thinking about like neurodiversity and multiple intelligences, you know, it's like you studied all of that hard.
Yeah, super hard.
And now you're doing it. And I just need to say too, like, I really respect your decision to leave a graduate assistantship because I feel like something that keeps me up at night is that I stayed in a graduate assistantship that made me miserable. I don't know. It's like people see the accomplishment as completing it. But I think about how much of yourself you sacrifice staying in a place that doesn't serve you or like, you know, bring you joy that you don't want to get up to go to. And you leaving, you making that choice, like, it's so hard to leave. They make you feel like you can't. And so I just wanted to say, like, from an academic perspective, too, like, I totally admire that decision to leave. I know it was not an easy one.
Yeah, thank you so much for saying that. I think in athletics, you know, we're raised as athletes and we're taught to keep it pushing, right? To not let hardships diminish us, that we fight through hard things. And I think there's a fine line between giving up and letting go. And we're not really taught where that fine line lives when we're developing and when we're athletes. And a lot of my experiences as a player, I think, led up to just being able to make that really difficult decision. In high school, I had a coach who told me I was never going to play at the next level. She humiliated me in front of a crowd full of people. And then my first year of college, I had a coach sit me down the night before the first game. And despite like hooping right in off season, in preseason and doing really well, and the MVP that year told me, you know, she sent me a text and she was like, I think you're going to start. Which as a freshman would be crazy. And the night before the first game, she called me into her office and told me I was in her bottom eight and that I wasn't going to see many minutes that year. And 18-year-old kid, you know, not really understanding how to have that conversation and just asking her why is really what I was searching for. Is like, what can I do better? I've logged more miles than anybody. I've stayed in the weight room. Like, everybody else is going out and drinking. Like, I'm in the gym. I made 47 threes in a row yesterday. Like, I don't understand. And oh man, I'll never forget this. She looked me in my eyes and just said, you know, Garza, I'm just not used to having one of those on my team. And this was back in 2010. You know, gay marriage wasn't legalized until 2015. She had just found out that I was gay. And yeah, like at 18 years old from the South, raised Southern Baptist, my parents and I weren't on the level that we are on today. And so having to, just face those sort of things head on, you know, led up to now I'm an adult and I have to learn what brings me life and energy and joy and what doesn't. Yeah. And I mean, that year built me, you know. I still like, I had a decision. She gave me a decision to either try to work my way back up or she told me I could redshirt. And in 2010, you know, redshirt, at least for me, an 18-year-old kid, I didn't know what a redshirt was. And the way she described it was you would have to come to every practice and every workout and all that, but you would never get to play. And it wasn't communicated to me that I would get that year of eligibility back. And so I only got to play 3 years of college basketball.
She stole a year from you.
She did.
For like no injury reason, no basketball related reason, just because you're gay.
Very personal. And we can leave this in the recording where you can cut it out, but like, to be honest, like, how are you going to win a championship without a lesbian on your team?
You really think you're going to have a successful basketball team without us?
It is what it is, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, the history is, like, the best revenge because, like, 2011, 2012, like, that time, I feel like stuff just shifted and it's like people stopped being quiet about queerness, about sexuality. And I know that came from a lot of these moments, right? Like I'm thinking about other players who were like kicked off their team or dismissed for like, you know, dating teammates, dating other athletes and stuff. It's just like, all those moments led up to these big moments where people are like, we will not be silent about who we are. And now it's like everybody is just like so out with it, right?
Yeah,
like,
right. So amazing. Amazing.
So a lot of our listeners know nothing about basketball. This is kind of like a entryway or like a bridge into women's basketball. So I wanted to just explain a little bit for them what a red shirt is. So what is being red shirted? Because how I understand it is, so in college, you are still on the team, but you sit out the year.
Yeah. So there's different reasons for a red shirt. There's, you know, medical red shirt. There's a developmental red shirt. There's, you know, many different ways you could do it. But a red shirt means you continue developing for the year. You don't get to play in any games. If you play in a certain amount of games, like if you play in like 5 games or less, you can appeal and get the year back. But it means you continue development and you still go to school and you get that year of schooling, but you get an extra year to play your sport. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously not the way it was explained to me. All I understood was you have to sit out, but you mm-hmm. have to practice, go to the weight room, do the track workouts, all of that, mm-hmm. but you'll never get to play. Not understanding mm-hmm. that the cost versus benefits there is I'll still get to go to school for 5 years and get another year to play. So that's what a red shirt is. And many people take them for really good reasons.
Yeah.
That's why you see, you know, especially because of the COVID year, there's people that have been in college yeah. for 8 years now because they had
yeah.
two red shirts and then COVID year, they got an extra year and then mm-hmm. they're playing out their eligibility years. But yeah. that's what a red shirt means.
Thanks for helping clarify that.
But yeah, I don't know how healthy this is, but there are very few things more motivating than pure spite. So that year, I was a point guard. You know, I was still the first in every practice, last one to leave. I would run and do the punishments with my teammates, even though I didn't have to because I wasn't out at the bars drinking. And
yeah.
I stayed in the weight room. I used to lift and do cardio on game day because I knew I wasn't going to be in the game. And mm-hmm. yeah, I just developed. I knew that there was a choice that I had, a crossroads mm-hmm. of I'm either going to let this thing define me or I'm going to keep it moving and I'm going to be great mm-hmm. in spite of it.
I appreciate you sharing that experience because, you know, I know just listening to it, it was not an easy one. Mm-hmm. But also, it just makes me think so much about like queer folks are resilient because we have to be. Mm-hmm. I just think about all the like queer brilliance that we don't even get to see in the world because mm-hmm. we're not even given the opportunity, right? So like to just be redshirted because of your identity, I've never heard that before. And it's just I don't even know, like discrimination is too small of a word, right? mm-hmm. to hold it, but to like take that experience and turn it into something that didn't push you out of something that you're passionate about. Yeah, I can just really relate a lot, you know,
like, yeah,
as my absolutely. Own career has unfolded. So, yeah.
It's funny, money, that you haven't heard of that happening. It's actually fairly common.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking.
Yeah, even now I've got an intern that works for me that is out of school who just made this switch into a family-oriented culture or approach. And we all know what that means, family-oriented.
Yes.
And
don't be gay.
Yeah.
yeah. That's what it means.
Yeah. And so we just found her, you know, a couple of new spots and she got a few offers in California where, you know, they love the gays there. So it'll be a much better, it'll be a much better fit. But yeah, it still happens. And it's yeah. just bananas that it's 2024. Gay marriage has been legalized now for nearly a decade.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. in these spaces where you're supposed to feel the safest, where you're most vulnerable, coaches are the adults that children spend the most time with that aren't their parents.
Yes.
And
yeah.
that's such an important job. And yeah. we really just let anybody be coaches. And this mm-hmm. is why, like, this is kind of leading into the Change in the Game conference. Like, mm-hmm. we, in this heartbeat of the growth of women's basketball, we're right inside of it. And we have a chance to redefine the standard mm-hmm. and what we accept, not just from our players, but from our peers. We make this huge mm-hmm. to-do about holding our athletes accountable and making sure they hold themselves accountable, making sure they hold their teammates accountable. Mm-hmm. And we excuse ourselves of doing the same in this industry for each other.
Yes.
We're on yes. the uptick. I think we all feel it. Mm-hmm. It's all like bubbly inside, like, wow. So I think it's all moving in the right direction, and it was built in the same way the WNBA was built on women who did not and probably will not receive the recognition that they deserve.
Yeah.
In the same way that we're fighting for this sort of equity, this sort of not about me isms, we're really mm-hmm. in an exciting time for all of that to shift.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I'm thinking about so much. Okay, so. I'm thinking about, like coaches being recognizable people. That feels really new to me. Like, I think growing up and like watching basketball, maybe like 5 or 6 coaches, you know, like would be really well known. They were more than likely always coaching men's teams. But now, like that's shifting. And people know the names of like folks who coach outside of men's basketball. And what you were just sharing about like shifting and changing the idea of like who becomes a coach and like the responsibility of that position.
I read this article the other day about like our parents and how our parents weren't allowed to understand or feel anxiety, depression, those sorts of things that do plague young people while they're in development, understanding changes and all of those things. They were just made to push those things away. And that's it. You don't talk about it. Like you just keep it moving. That generation became coaches. And so a lot of the culture of coaching that we're trying to combat really wasn't even those coaches' fault. Like it's how they were coached. It's how they were taught what a leader is supposed to look like or feel like and what mental toughness is. And now we're starting to understand the importance of positive psychology, of saying, yes, you're going to go through hard things, but we're going to keep it moving. We're going to say, look how hard you worked. And because of that, you are where you are. Not because just by chance, right? Look at the work you've done and look what it's gotten you. Yeah. That message was not delivered to the coaches that were trying to help shape in this new environment of how we shape people. And so I think a lot of it and why these coaches are household names is because those coaches that are now household names in women's basketball, for the most part, have intentionally leaned into that shit.
Yeah. This is also making me think about something that I've learned from you is it feels really connected to anxiety, because anxiety to me is like everything all at once. I call it five lane brain. Like it's just like everything. But something that you've shared through like your videos and your social media presence is, what's the one thing? Like, what are we going to focus on one thing at a time? Right. And
I just got the chills, money. That's
wow. It feels like a grounding activity almost, like an anti-anxiety approach to getting better. It also doesn't feel like far off, you know, like affirmations or goals or whatever can feel really far off. But if you're like, okay, I'm just going to focus on my foot position today and that's it. Like, even if I don't make any of the shots, if my feet were positioned, you know,
totally. It's
something that you can apply everywhere, not just in like basketball or shooting. And so I really appreciate that.
That's amazing. Shooting does become meditative when you treat it like that.
Yes. Reminds me of an episode from last season where we talked about it like being like medicine. You know, it's like, okay, this can reduce the anxiety if I can learn to apply these things in other spaces in life too. Yeah.
Love it.
Which you definitely have. You're the founder of Changing the Game Conference, and it's coming up in April. For anyone who might not know, what do you want them to know about Changing the Game? And maybe even tell us a little bit about what inspired you to create it.
Changing the Game is the first completely women-led coaching conference that we're holding at the Final Four. And we intend to hold it at the Final Four every year. And I'd had this idea of a completely women-led conference for a few years. And then two things happened last summer. One was I read a book called Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. And in that book, the premise of it was understanding where you are in time and space, and making your decisions, whether in business or life or relationships, taking those time and space type things into account. And so number one was I saw that we got 95,000 people at a volleyball game in Nebraska. And did you remember that? When that they like broke the women's viewership. I think, you know,
no.
Don't quote me on the number, but it was something. They put the volleyball Huge. Court in the middle of the Nebraska football stadium and sold it out.
What?
And so I was thinking to myself, if we can get 95,000 people to show up at a volleyball game in Nebraska, right. Certainly we can get 50 really intentional coaches to show up at the Final Four for something like this. That was kind of my first bubble. The other was last summer, I was asked to speak at a player development conference. And yeah, it was a big one. And they asked me to speak on the women's experience in coaching. And I said, okay, no problem. I got you. And what I did over the next 6 weeks was I informally interviewed hundreds of women that were coaches, whether it was my friends that coach in the NBA to some of the friends that I have coaching in the NFL to, you know, fourth grade coaches of their 9-year-olds team. And everybody pretty much had the same answer. So I show up and the message that I gave was simple. It was the question I was asked was, what is the women's experience in coaching like? And the women's experience in coaching is being asked to speak at a player development conference about what it's like to be a woman, not this craft that I'm so committed to.
Yep.
Truth with love. Mm-hmm. If y'all really want to empower my voice, ask me about basketball. That's how we go about changing the game. And then they never paid me.
What?
Not only that, but 5 months later, I got a back charge on the card I left at the hotel for incidentals. It was a 5-star hotel they put us up on for a room they never covered either. It was a nearly 4-figure charge that was just a surprise. And so this experience I sat with, and I was in, this sounds so like hippity-dippity, but I was in Montana. I was really reflecting on this experience, and I was looking at a full moon, the most magical full moon I've ever seen. And I'd never been to Montana before, and it was clear, the night was warm. And as I was looking at this full moon, I like took a deep breath, and I kid you not, a shooting star goes across the sky, illuminated by the full moon. If I'm just making meaning to make meaning, I was like, well, so I got to flip a table and do this thing now. And so I got in my notes in my iPhone, and I just made this list: parking, food, speakers. Who do we need? Who could be a headliner? It just went into this mad scientist situation. Mm-hmm. And then I emailed Nancy Lieberman and her team. Mm-hmm. And I told her the story. And I was like, this is what I'm trying to do. Do you want to do it with me? And she said, yeah, I love it. What's your budget for this? And I said, I don't know, but I'm going to figure it out. So she told me her speaking fee. And I said, I don't have that right now, but I can get that to you before the event starts, if you're willing to lean into this with me. So then when Nancy said yes, I was like, well, now I really have to do it. And I hollered it. The 9 most incredible women that I had either crossed paths with or that were friends of mine, some really big in the basketball space, fairly known, some that are serving basketball in ways that most coaches don't even consider. And so I didn't want it to be X's and O's. Every other conference talks systems and strategies, X's and O's, whatever. I wanted this to be a place where we had all of these women that are serving basketball in vastly different ways, with some crossover, of course, but sports psychology, mental performance, culture. And what's amazing, money, are the coaches we have signed up are not, like, obviously most of them, the bulk of them are basketball coaches, but we've got WNBA associate head coaches signed up to attend. We've also got fourth grade coaches of their 9-year-olds team. We've got Olympic beach volleyball coaches from Canada that are bringing their entire team down. We've got executive coaches from Georgia that are don't even know anything about basketball that are signed up to go. All of these people that have heard this message, it's resonating across sports, across industries of like, all right, women are being recognized in this way now. Now let's make sure the standard is the standard for all of us.
I'm just like sitting here in awe of your ability to like, I don't know, like bounce back. Like, I mean, so many points that you've shared, I would have been like, well, I guess this is it. And you didn't. You sat down and drafted out changing the game. And I also am thinking about like, you don't have to be into basketball to get something from Changing the Game conference. You know, you don't have to know anything about sports to learn something or to be a coach. I love that. Like the application of these very tangible skills through basketball into all these other areas. Is this what the mind of a point guard is like?
Man, I would say so. And it's just like, I think the very first question you asked me is, how would you describe yourself as a coach in three words? Like, it's not about me. And it's about these coaches and these women and men that have already signed up to go. Mm-hmm. I plan on today, I drafted a script of a Loom that I plan to send all of our speakers just to, you know, remind them that there's this temptation when we get up on stage to make that entire experience about us. Mm-hmm. And not that that would even necessarily be the wrong thing to do, mm-hmm. but not here. Like the Change in the Game conference is not about the women that are going to speak and be incredible. It's about what those women can do for the people attending. That I've coached mm-hmm. them to engage the audience at least twice, if not more, because it's not about them. It's about mm-hmm. the people in front of them that are willing to stand shoulder to shoulder with us. And the youth coaches, right, who are so important, mm-hmm. don't get nearly enough recognition for shaping the next generation mm-hmm. of people, because the future of women's basketball is not the star athlete in high school right yeah. now. It's her teammate mm-hmm. who is 5'6" mm-hmm. and can't move sideways and becomes coach. How do we treat her?
Yeah.
How do we shape her? And so there's layers to it, but that's what Changing the Game is. It's about sending these women out, these men and women out, leaving them better than we found them. And like leaving them with this understanding of how important their job is.
Yes. So that sounds like the takeaway for anybody who might be interested in attending Changing the Game. It's the impact that you have ripples out. Not just to the person you're talking to, right?
Wait, I can't believe you're going to be there.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm excited. I'm going to be there. I'm just going to do like this little up and down jump. Like, yes.
Oh my yeah. gosh. It's going to be amazing.
I'm so.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
There are a lot of dope players in women's basketball, but not everyone gets their flowers, and I want to make sure they do. So, I'm going to shout out a player who everyone should know in a little segment called Money's MVP. This week, my MVP is Emma Cannon. Emma Cannon, also known as Click Clack Cannon, is known for being an underdog. Her current team is the Dallas Wings, and a unique thing about Emma is that she's from Rochester, New York. That's right. Upstate New York does not get nearly enough love, but we got some shooters up here, and Emma is one of them. So, Brianna, you actually coached Click Clack Cannon. anyone who has heard one episode of this podcast knows that I am an Indiana Fever fan. I don't care what y'all say. I'm riding with the Fever. And I just got so excited for a minute. You know, as an Indiana fan, I had a whole summer where I was just deeply infatuated with Emma Cannon. She is so fine.
No way.
I lost the whole summer to Emma Cannon. So I just want to hear all about, like, what was the experience like working with Emma?
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. Emma is a world-class human. Mm-hmm. Like, first and foremost, I met her at a golf course randomly in Phoenix. And she learned that I was a shooting coach. And she was like, hey, like, are you trying to get in the gym? Emma was the first pro player that believed in me, that gave me a chance to, like, to really teach her. And best story ever. Mm-hmm. Emma, when we met, she had a couple of 10-day contracts. No wonder you knew she played for Phoenix. That was so random. I was like, how did she know that?
I love it.
Emma had several 10-day contracts whenever we met. And at the time, in her shot attempts and her usage, she was ranked 109th in the league for catch and field goal percentage at 25%, which is, not great. And so then we met. I watched every possession in her entire career in the WNBA and some of her game film from overseas, which was where the majority of her career was. And so I already knew the answer before she walked into the gym. And answer was, Emma, you're freakishly strong. You can jab anybody you want to jab, but you're not a threat to shoot right now. You're not a threat to shoot from the catch and shoot, trailing the play, or on the pick and pop, or after a step up, roll it short rolling. So the very first day we trained, we measured her before I gave her any teaching. She went a round of 50 shots where I didn't give her any feedback, and she measured 52% from catch and shoot three, which is pretty good. She's a pro. Mm-hmm. We discovered that there was this little teeny tiny hitch at the top of her shot. It wasn't like a pronounced one. It was just a teeny tiny pause. And so, laws of physics, right? If you pause anything in motion, you're going to lose some power momentum, and some force from that. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I was like, Emma, you already know how to shoot. Like, we just got to work through that pause. So we took her off the basket. We put her on an exercise called line drops, which, for any of you listening that shape people's skills, taking the rim away while making adjustments in the body is one of the best things you can do, because athletes naturally get feedback from the rim and whether the ball is going in or not. So we took her off the rim. We just put her on a line and I said, okay, I just want you to shoot smooth with no pauses. Every time you do that, I'm going to give you a point. If you shoot smooth with no pauses and it lands directly on the line, because line drops help us shoot straight, then I'm going to give you 2 points. We're going to do 3 sets to 30. We did that every day. We didn't even put her on a basket for the first 15, 20 minutes. And that was it. And she just studied herself. Man, there's like clips I have of her still where she's working on her baseline, you know, slides. And you can see and hear her saying, ah, I felt it. I felt it. She'd take another shot. Ah, like she would just working through this. We worked through it for 4 days. End of the fourth day, we measure her again. And she shot 74%.
In 4 days?
In 4 days. Which what? Is, I mean, mind you, we were in the gym. Like,
well, yeah,
you
know, yeah.
But that still, is way...
That's a huge jump.
Too large of a gap to just be by chance.
Yeah.
Right? So she goes that season. She gets the end of season contract with Indiana that year. She tripled her attempts. And she went from being ranked 109th in the league to leading the entire WNBA in catch and shoot field goal percentage at 55.6%. And on top of that, like, how cool that is, like, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And also, Emma, she knows the names of every ticket taker, every custodian, the person who walks up and down the aisles. Like, so to find somebody who's so okay with removing ego and just leaning in. Yeah, she's obviously a dear friend of mine now. And I ended up meeting my partner through Emma. And my partner was Emma's, one of Emma's longtime best friends. And so, yeah, Emma.
I didn't know this was going to be a love story, too.
Yeah, Emma and I have shaped each other's lives in really, really meaningful ways.
Oh my gosh, that's so amazing. She's,
one of my favorite, most impactful people in my life.
Oh, that makes me so happy. Like, this is way more than I expected. So I love it. And then it ends in a love story. Yes. I was just thinking, as you were talking about, like, her knowing everybody's name. So one of the things that I do know about Emma is that she's from upstate, right? So I'm in Syracuse, but, like, Rochester is right next door.
Yeah.
And these are real, like, you know, working class cities, and even, you know, they're like former Rust Belt, whatever, but like, even though they are like larger cities, they feel so small town. You know, shout out to upstate. We don't get a lot
shout
of
out,
love. Yeah, up here in the great north, but a lot of really good players come from here, you know, Emma being one of them. Yeah. And I think that's just like the culture of it.
Yeah, East Coast kids are different for sure. Dogs, right? You go to the West Coast and they're a little bit more finesse. You kind of got to nudge them a little bit more. East Coast, it's like, okay, everybody calm down. Okay. And Emma, do you know her record-breaking stat from high school?
From high school in Rochester? No, I don't.
It is the most absurd thing I've ever heard. She had a game with 52 and 49.
What?
52 points. And 49 rebounds.
How, was she playing by herself?
I remember, because I did this whole Twitter thread, this very long, I'll have to find it for you, of like all of the things she'd been through, how many years she played overseas before she even got a chance in the league. And so I went all the way back and I found this article from her high school career. And I like, I looked at it and I was like,
what, that?
I've never even heard. It was like 45 or 49. Like 45 rebounds? So,
like every rebound in the game.
Girl, she was.
Yeah.
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 So impressive.
Okay, that has to be the unique thing, or like a little known fact about Emma Cannon, is that she had a high school game with 52 and 49, and she wasn't the only one on the court. That is a wild stat line. What? Okay. So I think y'all can tell from this conversation, but I think one thing that Emma is really known for is like being an underdog. You know, like she was undrafted, played, yeah, like you said, played overseas. I think she's currently overseas, right? In Turkey, maybe?
Yeah.
But it's just, I personally feel like it's so hard to be drafted into the WNBA. Like I was talking with producer Mick before we started recording about like maybe 48 players will be drafted every year. And that's just getting your name called, right? That doesn't mean you are guaranteed a spot. And Emma has tweeted about this before, right? Like I know there are so many girls who are not going to hear their name called. Her being one of those players, but has still been so impactful to the league. You know, she's played on franchise, like championship winning teams and been a leader on those teams. So being drafted or not is not the be all end all of your career. And I think Emma is just such a shining example of that.
Yeah.
And now I know, like very recently, she got signed to the Dallas Wings. So although I am sad as a Fever fan to see her go, because I think that's one thing we've lacked a lot is like experience. But now she's taking her talents to Dallas. And I don't even know. Oh, my gosh. Like that team already, you know, like playoff run team. But now with Emma in addition to Arike. Oh, my gosh. The Twin Towers.
I think what's so cool about Emma is that she never attaches herself to stats in the same way that I attach things to stats, right? Like it's my job to read this, to read your minutes, to do that. Emma has played for 25 to 30 different teams.
Yeah.
And you could ask her face to face, hey, is there anybody you didn't really vibe with? You know, like any coaches or any teammates? And she'd be like, no, you know, I loved everybody. everybody. Mm-hmm. She's like, yeah, everybody's been great. You know, she's mm-hmm. just like who she is and how she exists. And every locker room needs that.
Yeah.
Every locker room, every court, every, you know, shaping rookies. Mm-hmm. And she's a bucket. Like, she's getting buckets. Yes. She hit her career high last year, 23 mm-hmm. points. You know, I had a bunch of my girls I mentor with me mm-hmm. and they got a video of me just like standing right in front of the TV, like arms crossed, like just in it. And to be a part of that journey with them, that has been so special. So yeah. special.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Thank you, Brianna. You have been the first guest in the MVP segment. So I really appreciate you doing this with me.
And oh my gosh.
Shout out to Emma Cannon. I want to give her all the flowers and all the things.
All the flowers.
Yes. Definitely one of my faves, even though she left Indiana.
Yeah. Yeah. Indiana looks like shaping up all right right now.
Oh, yeah. When I tell you my Twitter hands are ready. Brianna, before we go, where can folks find you?
So ShootersXShoot70 is my Instagram tag. That's where I do most of my business. It's a 70% or better gets you the green light on whatever shot you want to take. So ShootersXShoot70. And that's also my training website is ShootersXShoot70.training. So both of those places are where I do the bulk of my business. And the Changing the Game conference is at Changing the Game Final Four.
Yes. And you can find both of us there in April.
Yeah, you can. April 4th and 5th. Let's get it.
Rebound Revolution is an Edit Audio original podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Money McEachern. This episode was produced by Melissa Houghton, Mick Finnegan, and me. It was edited, mixed, and mastered by Mick Finnegan. Our executive producer is Steph Colburn. Thank you to Kathleen Speckert and the whole Edit Audio team. And to y'all for listening.